and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Oresic. Peter Oresic was born in Ford City, a mill town in the Allegheny River Valley. He earned his college tuition in the 1970s during summers laboring for the Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company. He worked as a publisher for 22 years and as a high school teacher, a poet in the schools, and director of master's programs in both publishing and creative writing. His latest work is the chapbook To a Museum Guard at Shift Change, published by West North Press, and a verse biography of Andy Warhol, Warhol-O-Rama, from Carnegie Mellon University Press. His other books of poetry include Definitions from West End Press and American Peace, Shadow Press, Other Lives from Adastra Press, and The Story of Glass, also from West End Press. As an editor, his anthologies include Working Classics, Poems on Industrial Life, For a Living, The Poetry of Work, and the forthcoming The Pittsburgh Novel, A Reader's Guide to Western Pennsylvania in Fiction, 1792 to 2013. He has edited the Pittsburgh Stories of Willa Cather, which will be released in 2014 by Carnegie Mellon Press. Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm great. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. It's also great to, there's plenty more that could go into that bio that we don't have room for. It's great to just think of all the work you've done and all your great books. So really happy to have you.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Okay, so you're going to start with some new poems?
Yeah, I would like to do that.
Okay.
And the first is called In the Midst of Life.
Okay.
I sleep now facing east and deeper. Budilnik, chronicer, clock alarm, and I wake. Which country? Pittsburgh. A sky hung with birds. The waning moon and I brood over life's meandering plot, its economy of self-esteem, how the body is stardust or claims to be. I'll exit with a winged torso, like a Russian icon's John the Baptist, bearing my own head on a silver platter. Soberness sprung up in a distant church. I'll be soused. Meanwhile, I feel common yet precious, like trophy deer designed for serious hunters, great genetics, proven does. Sooner or later, I remember the dream I am living. I comb my hair toward death. I disappear into the mirror. Forget soul. According to my mother who brought me here, thank you, she won't be taking me home. I'm slewed. Lock me in the tank for heretics, yakking, always yakking, a growler of beer and six amber mugs, six conspirators. Each night strung out, each morning the sun blazing, a lake of flame. My autumnal angel rises and hisses. I remember, I forget. Mary, Mary. My old mother Mary spied the Virgin Mary, shouted, I like that face. Buddha-bellied, droop-breasted, wheel-chaired octogenarian, mother-tethered, mother-docked at her nightstand, votives and icons, the stink of dementia. O lords, teen shepherd spied a vapor. So what? Flesh matters, vision matters. Bury your dead. Silence the silver bells, the choir all in a row. Muffle that priest. Muffle the mourners shuffling past the stuffed candles as they return to idling autos. Muffled, too, the morning she crosses over, house to hearse to cemetery sod. No shouting from the worms, please. No roses. No roses in the yawning grave. Dim the sun. No bird chirp. No tree with generous shade. In the contiguous field, no tractor, no mournful cows loitering, no raucous roosters crow, no bells pealing, no candles, no incense curling. Don't eat the luncheon meats. Unshout the noise that banished Mary. Mark the day of her cold feet, after her stroke, after the split skull, after the plaqued brain release of my mother, Mary, who spied the Virgin Mary, whose face I pray she likes. Paper plates. Forget the thumb dents on the mottled cheese, or how the bread got foul, and this dull knife. Forget how the wind whips sand to dam your eyes, and ants that march precisely in procession. Your mother fed you, at times, from paper plates. A paisley plate won't hold your mother's face. It assumes aspects according to memory, continuous tones of black and white and black. A picnic is no picnic. See the dune view, the girdling line of the horizon, how the stars fade in at dusk. Remember your mother. Dive down in the churchyard grasses, breaking up once and for all the charmed family circle. I've been painting a lot these days, last 10 years especially, and this poem is a poem about a painter I like, Kandinsky, and it's called Reverse Painting on Glass, Kandinsky. Small-ribbed beings, the lake of bird souls, a lightning strike, lowly boats and rowers on blue the color of heaven, a horseman masked and sainted, George cubiformed? I think best on the second floor, window over shoulder, high back leather chair so rich with feeling. I report what I see. Kandinsky marshaling 1,000 voices. Flushed from a winter walk, I hug the desk and dictate the asymmetrical dream. When yellow vibrates, I see the trumpet shape stretch, the full width of the painting, ochre spouting above Kremlin domes. White horse flying into a sun disk or drumhead, zigzag into a darker shaman blue. Colors pile. Web-like lines link the main elements. Turbulence rocks a horse deprived of its rider. A lance, an empty halo. St. George askew, tipped by the evil eye glaring from the lower quadrant. White abyss, the color of silence before birth. I report resonances, the yapping mouth of Kandinsky. I sit sober. Images twist through states of trance. My back is stiff, upright, my mind attentive and waiting for you. Your mind stuck on business. For you to finger this luxurious glass, drops of blue that drip from the sun. Kiss my forehead. Verify this report. Lead me downstairs to the pie. Warm from the oven, and berry blue.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Oresic, reading some new poetry. Well, I love these new poems, and one thing I keep thinking when I'm listening is, you know, I keep hearing this reporting voice and then all this emotion coming in at the same time. I mean, I think that's hard to do, to, you know, have this sense of reporting, you know, this, and this accumulative listing, but then all this emotion floods in. And can you talk about constructing your poems, if you were thinking of that, or if that rings any bells with you?
It does ring a bell, I would say. I have been writing differently, I think. I think I've been trying to talk about what I see, which I probably wasn't doing in the past. It's kind of back to the future kind of thing for me to go back. And then talking emotionally is also a bit different. I think it's less about humor and more about raw feeling and emotion. So it's difficult. I think I write more frequently. I can capture more of what I talk about when I talk about the life I see. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm also, I think, getting better of cutting back, cutting the prose down into poetry, mm-hmm. which has always been the challenge, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, thinking of your other books, I mean, I've always experienced your work as very having deep emotional work in it. It just seems like it's more on the surface somehow. But I also got this feeling of, and maybe you'll read some of these poems, but of legacy and history and revisiting some kind of wonder. It just seems like all kinds of things are floating around here. I don't know if you were going to read the Rutheria poem or the I Love to Sleep.
Yes, I'm going to read both of those.
Oh, great. That's my friend. Oh, great. So maybe we can go to that.
But, yeah, right, let me try that.
Okay.
Ruthenia, of course, is the name of the vanished kingdom where the Carpatho-Rusyns originated and came before they came to America, and before in Europe they were divided into six modern countries. So it's a big part of my ethnic obsession and trying to understand who these people were and where they came from. But in 1995, I was able to visit the homeland for the first time, and this was after, of course, the fall of the Berlin Wall and so on. So I have been writing some poems, which I didn't write almost 20 years ago when I went, but that deal with a lot of those memories, etc. So, Ruthenia. I forget Ruthenia daily, fondly. Daisy chain of mountain hamlets my ancestors fled, by foot, by rail, by sail, forswearing Ruthenia, a cloud of memories drifting from the simmering peasant pot, or the Cold War map I hunched over in grammar school. For 500 years we barely evolved in stateless Ruthenia, where religion was the cabbage and the songbird was the gypsy, and the heraldic achievement was the red bear on hind legs, its tongue flicking, a field of silver on the sinister side, stripes on the dexter, split by the golden trident of Vladimir the Great. Which sounds baronial, but is true. As the primary chronicle records, he chose Byzantium over Mecca after deliberation with boyars because drinking is the joy of the Rus. When I return to thee, Ruthenia, I will fly by way of London with vodka miniatures and inflate movies. I will kiss the earth. I will peck each cheek. You never unlearn Ruthenia and its obsolete ethnonyms when your blood is from Ruthenia, like playing drinking games. I will forget America slowly during my sojourn among the oaks, the lindens, the Carpathian ash, as I loaf in the undergrowth, and in the miserium, and in the honeysuckle where I spy voles and black storks and the hazel grouse as I sigh aloud. But my mother is America. I love to live in America where the state religion is exuberance unregulated, and the songbird is the iPod, and the national pastime is ritualized violence. It's 5,000 miles and seven centuries from Rusinko to New York and her beacon hand ablaze. The land here is light, the harbor dark, the door is always open, Ruthenia. You alone are real to us, a miracle on the last leg of its approach. This poem is called The Ruthenian Lamb, and it's about an experience I had about 20 years ago, visiting some people who wanted to have a feast for my return back to the United States. But this was the sort of thing I guess I never had seen as a kid. My grandparents did not slaughter animals or anything like that, but this was like the way, mm-hmm. The Ruthenian lamb. He loaded the cask with sparkling water and stropped the blade against a stone, a grating noise that rushed the dogs into a frenzy, the lamb divining something as well, dashing to the fenced pen. Then he grasped its rear legs and jerked upward, the lamb digging in its front legs, a speckless spot on the turf near the door of the tilted hut and the fire pit with a kettle roiling. He tossed the lamb onto its back and bound the front legs with twine, holding a back leg under his knee so I could clasp down the head by its ears. Dividing the wool just to the left of the breaststone, he slit the hide, exposing the inner lining of fat that swells with organs. No blood rose out. The lamb lay still, silent, and he formed his right hand fingers together into a point and drove them deep into the abdomen of the lamb, along the inside of the ribs to the spine, where he felt the main artery with his forefinger, plucked it once, and severed it. He stripped back the hide in four directions and weighed it down with rocks in order to carve, the belly lying up and glistening white and fatty. Only a patch of wool remained on the sternum. It must not be touched. Instead, I leaned carefully over the lamb and clenched the strip of woolly hide with my teeth, rocking slowly, pulling the patch away from the carcass. Now the carving began. I opened my notebook and asked the name of each part, each organ, and I learned 50 new words. Later, the bubbling cauldron filled with hot blood stew. He hung the meat to dry. The tail, however, was offered to me, a guest of honor. He handed me the knife, and I sliced a small wedge of fat, presenting a piece to each member of our clan in descending order of age, as the protocol demands. There they stand even now, without motion of any hands, in the waxing dark, the old woman in the old chair not aroused in any caliber, and thus slowly I yield them to the branch above, expressed in a deep and red glow as the light wind stirs and it ruffles. What I didn't put in the poem, that maybe I should say, is that they did present us with the eye of the lamb to eat.
To eat?
It's not easy. But it was passed.
Wow.
I don't know why. You know, this is a little out of my league. This medieval stuff.
Let me say, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Resick, reading some very intense poems. And, I mean, I love these poems. You know, the writing, you know, I mean, you're writing about a visceral experience, but the writing is visceral, and it's so precise, and it's very affecting. And, you know, so wonderful in that way. Can you read a couple more and then we'll talk?
Sure.
Okay.
This poem is called That Summer. That summer, I loathed beer, its bitter rinse over the salted tongue. That August, I accepted Pinot Noir as personal savior. I craved its blush notion of the sweet that summer. I let my eldest son do the grilling. I didn't need control for once. That 4th of July, I ate steak, braised and rare, a sense of fullness. I passed on desserts the size of planets. I yapped. I was stupidly satisfied that summer. Spirited, buff-bodied, my mind for hours like a Learjet, thrusters forward to cruising altitude. I didn't listen. I didn't notice your death like a train in the distance. I focused on your breath, your eyes shifting from ceiling to wall, then closing, then blinking awake. I focused on the radio and its loop of song. I focused on your eyes, closed again, your raspy breath, your purple tongue. It's hard to do that. To a museum guard at shift change. From the cafe, beneath the double flight of marble stairs, I watch your right foot plant, the left scrape its sole, see the vapors trailing you, undead, unemployed, from the lofty rooms of bronze statuettes, oils of nudes and clusters of nudes, watercolors of unkempt meadows. You, through the mist of the Romanesque fount, are my muse descending. I climb past you, smile, and claim your abandoned station. I was here first, years ago, a gray spring day. My mother chaperoned. We queued along a velvet rope, ticketed in a line twisting for Whistler's mother. Solemnity, reward. Then tiptoed the balustrade to these cascading stairs. What I remember now is my mother's plumpness, the buttons of her Sunday coat, her delicate aroma. I gripped her wrists, still a boy, not yet restless or private or spooked by dreams of loss, still a boy and consolable, my hand and her hand fused. Our feet in tandem descended the imperial stairs, and the fountain spewed and splashed. The hushed angel in a tapestry bore witness to how she shushed me past the drowsy guard, a light on the edge of his folding chair, precarious on the landing. Then, swiftly toward the loose-breasted twin goddesses on twin pedestals who lift globes of light aloft beside the colossal doors.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Peter Oresic, reading some new poems. Really, really great poems. One thing I keep going back to is the clear voice and the sense of immediacy and the true voice. And it just seems to ring out in these poems. And I know when I was reading your chapbook to a museum guard at Shift Change, the title poem you just read, I kept writing down things and saying, I can use that somehow, which is a sign of a really good poetry. And some things I've written down that I think some of them are from I Love to Sleep Curled, but they're just so beautiful. I swear by the heaven of the dream arts. I trust the body arched soaring and the pure labor of the dream. There's a lot about dreaming in this book, and which I kind of love. And then another one was just a boy in the air, again, face to the stars. I mean, there's a lot of inspirational, there are a lot of inspirational moments in the book. And I wonder if you could talk about how they arose, if your writing.
Well, I've been interested in dreams a long time, but I had a kind of an emergency event about a year ago where I did have a surgery. It was a craniotomy, of all things, very unanticipated. And I have to tell you that I started revisiting the dreams by having a dream while under a very long surgery. And it got me interested again in talking about what I see. Mm-hmm. So I changed, I guess, after that event, and I've been recording my dreams more regularly, mm-hmm. a few times a week, and really working with them in the poetry in ways that I wouldn't have done, you know, mm-hmm. in past years. So that's been great.
That is. I mean, not that you had to have the surgery, but what's come out of it. Can you remember your dreams more?
Yes. Yes.
That's great.
Yes, it's really been, it's really changed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just the sense of wonder is really something in your work. And, I mean, there was always that, I mean, correct me if you think I'm wrong, that sense of optimism and heavy belief in your work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's not like, you know, something has turned on its head, but it just seems an opening, more of an opening in these poems, that is stunning. So, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Well, let me read I Love to Sleep Curled, because it is, maybe I'm older too and I just enjoy sleeping more. I don't know. But I do love to sleep. And I do sleep now in a different way, physically on a bed. Mm-hmm. I love to sleep curled. I love to sleep curled on the edge under her arm, unlicensed and weaving in the spectral, chromatically climbing the 12 notes, just a boy in the air again, face to the stars, soaring, sailing soberly, watched by worshiping faces. I swear by heaven of the dream arts. I trust the body arched and soaring, and the pure labor of the dream, not the usual grief of the nation, localized, yowling from the mouth, just the ripest of dreams now dropping, now pouring like rain through hair, shampooing this sleep unutterably, seeping into the honeycomb, into the well, into the silent language of the gorgeous, while I curl on the edge, her arm above me, the pillow cradled beneath my chin.
That's a great poem.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we have time for just a couple more.
Again, I paint nearly every day, and this is called Autumn Evening at the Window with Brushes. Crimson clouds, a low-angled sun, redness deepening. It's an art to see shapes in clouds or spot a silhouette. At the end of a painting session, I am contented by the gurgle of faucet and soap. I love working brush bellies with thumb and forefinger, rinsing, scraping the ferrule with my nails, swabbing blotter cloth till no more pigment dislodges, or I repeat the massage. Sable martens boast a belly that wicks, reservoirs my paint, permits a fine artist to increase pressure and broaden a line, and so that pigment flows slowly, evenly, composing sleek curves. Clouds drift and unravel. I dress a clean brush to original form, tipping needle to a point. My mother's pierogi. She boils, like most everyone, potatoes till tender, drains well and adds butter, salt, the sharp cheese during the mash. The breadboard on hooks wrapped in an old bedsheet is carried up the stairs by yours truly. I stare at the bowl mostly and sifted flour blending with yolk and milk, oil and water, slow to reach consistency. Beyond her, the kitchen's heat dissolves the latticework of frost on the window panes. She usually hums along radio songs while she kneads 3 minutes, lightly dusts with flour and kneads again. She opens the door, sets the bowl on the porch to chill. In large saucepan with onion at medium blue flame, she melts butter 8 minutes, maybe 10, and blends with potato filling. I haul dough and roll to approximately 5 millimeters, because at age 12, I believe millimeters are the future in America. I cut circles roughly 7 centimeters in diameter with glass, a drinking glass with a decal of New York, a souvenir, a habit I can't fully explain. As I carve, she kneads, access together, re-rolls, and we repeat, a dollop of filling in the middle, and brushing with egg white. She hums through this, too, folding and pinching edges. In a pot of boiling salted water, cook the pierogi 2 minutes before draining and set aside. In saucepan, butter-coated, she fries them until golden, then serves with sour cream and browned onion. At table, as far as I can remember, there was never green salad or vegetable. Only pierogi, a woman of 40, humming, winning my heart by her love for pierogi.
The poetry of Peter Oresic. Thanks so much, Peter, for being here. Really beautiful.
Thank you. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.